on your desk somewhere. It's basically just a normal roll call, call the order, citizen comments, and then the presentation.
Roll call, please.
Coke?
Here.
Pelosina? Cott?
Here.
Wilczewski?
Here.
Frieders?
Here.
Funkhauser? Tarulis?
Here.
Teeling?
Okay, I do not have an agenda part, so instead of opening up with citizen comment, you want to do your presentation and then open it up with citizen comment?
Yeah, it's meant to be free. So.
Can I give you an idea? Do you like it?
Yeah.
Roll call. Definitely. Yeah. All right, citizen comments. Anyone want to comment now, or would you like to see the presentation first and then open it up?
Let's see the presentation.
Yeah, great. Yep. Okay.
Thank you. Didn't know we'd put you to work.
I signed the agenda.
All right. For our resident participants, I'm Farmerson, I'm the city administrator for Yorkville. And, you know, we put together a 10 slide PowerPoint. So it'll be 5 or 10 minute presentation. We'll open it up for discussions from the audience afterwards. There might even be questions from the aldermen themselves too. And then after that, we'd actually post the meeting such that it would just kind of be an open forum after that. So if you want to leave, you're going to have two people might show up. They might just have questions about the PowerPoint or questions with the aldermen after that, and that's fine. We'll take minutes on that and post the audio tomorrow. So it is going to be a little bit open-ended after this, but for now we'll do the formal presentation and then keep moving. So, okay, so the question on the ballot is, should we become a home rule government? The actual language is there, and there's a sample ballot photo later in the presentation. But basically, the Illinois Constitution permits you to be a home rule municipality or a non-home rule municipality. Non-home rule is the default. There's a population threshold for you to go up to referendum and ask the citizens if you want to become a home rule unit of government. And so that's what we have to ask if we think home rule is something we want to focus on for residents. So what is it exactly? So in general, it shifts responsibility and authority from what's in the state statute for what municipalities can only do to really, we can do anything that we see fit except for what the state statutes say that we can do. So it kind of reverses the standard for governing ourselves. So again, once you cross 25,000 residents in the city, which we do predict that to happen within the next 10 or 15 years, depending on population growth, you're automatically bumped up to home rule status. So for whatever reason, in 1970, when the Illinois state constitution was approved, that was the threshold they decided that you were responsible enough to be able to control your own destiny and your own authorities, and it hasn't changed since. So again, we're sitting at about 16 or 17,000, and we're on our 134th building permit of the year, so we're adding a few hundred people per year. Back in the boom years, we were adding thousands of people per year, so it just depends on how many people it comes. So who has a role in the area? There's a couple of municipalities. Oswego, just within the past 2 or 3 years, became home rule. They've done some interesting things with shifting the tax burden off of local residents and putting it on outside residents, which is generally what home rule municipalities try to do. They don't necessarily increase taxes. They just shift it from people who live in town to people who live outside of town. And we'll talk about that in a couple other slides. But one of the last communities to go out to referendum was Shorewood. They actually did it last year. So the history for home rule referendums is the majority of them do get defeated, but there have been a lot of success stories if the residents either have an issue that needs to be addressed through home rule status, or they just trust the people that are in office at the single issue that they decided it, or if they decided that they wanted to control their investing overall. So what does it change? So I mentioned that it kind of flips the script on what you can and can't do based on the Constitution. So in general, it does give the municipality and the residents more flexibility and authority to address issues as they pop up. So right now, if the state Constitution doesn't say that we can do something, there's absolutely no ability for us to do it. So kind of the prime very public example has been mold issue that popped up in some of the apartments on the south side of town recently. And some of the residents that lived there said, you should create this, landlord-tenant regulation. You should require deposits. And while that's not something that my guess is that we would do if we were a home rule municipality, we cannot do it as a non-home municipality. If we were home rule, we could at least discuss it and vote on it. And if you guys thought it was a great idea, then you could approve. But as a non-home municipality, we would have the ability to say, apartment landlords need to register with the city and pay a $10 fee, and so that way we know, that they're keeping their units on this fee. So if we're home rule, we could say, no, we're going to create a program that works for us and work off of that. So we've talked about home rule a couple times over the past few years at the city council level, just on whether the referendum will be approved. And so the city council has actually made some early statements, that they really want to take a long-term view on this. And so they actually even approved, it's called a home rule policy, with three bullet points on there. Or three of the things that they actually said, if the city becomes home rule, we want to physically restrict our powers now. So one is we committed to keeping the debt capacity as a non-home municipality. In general, based on the amount of property that we have in our town, we can issue about $40 or $50 million more dollars worth of debt all together at once. And if we were a non or a home rule municipality, that cap would be lifted. So we basically said we don't want to issue a ton of debt. We want to just keep within our existing framework, so we're okay with that. Second is if we increase any tax or create any new tax, we would agree to hold a public hearing before we voted on it. There's no requirement in state law or city code that requires that now. So if we wanted to implement a higher amusement tax, for instance, it's currently at 3%. We can go up to 5% under state law. We could just put it on an ordinance and vote on it now. Whereas this, if we become a municipality, we would actually have to do a public hearing before we even voted on that. And then the last and the big one is PTEL, which is your property tax caps. So it's a non-home rule. We'll talk about this in the next moment. So under our levy, we can only increase the amount of money that we ask for property taxes by CPI or 5%, whichever is less. CPI in the past few years have been, 1 or 2% or even less, actually, for a couple of years, plus whatever new construction you have. So if you have a giant Caribbean Skittles factory opening, for instance, you don't lose out on that revenue in the first year. And we've said, as a non-home rule municipality, we'll continue to follow that even if we become a home rule municipality. Home rule municipalities in general are allowed to tax and increase from year to year in whatever amount they choose. But we've said we don't really want that. We want to do some of these other things. So the concern, obviously, with the taxing powers and the property taxes is that a new city council comes in or the existing city council changes their mind and says, hey, we're going to increase property taxes by, whatever percent, or we're going to create a new alcohol tax, or, popular things, like a soda tax, or a shopping bag tax that floated out. So as a home rule municipality, there is some ability to do that. That is, generally, if the state constitution doesn't say that we can't do that, we can't do that. So then the other concern is just more regulations on businesses. I talked about the mold issue in the apartments. The landlords and people who were particularly concerned just about regulations that businesses might say, no, that's a ridiculous program that you're proposing, and, that's not something that we think is good. So we would have the ability to do so as a formal municipality. So things that we've actually talked about that City Council endorsed to communicate to everybody is like things that we aren't committing to do necessarily, but things we would consider if we were a home rule municipality are these eight bullet points right after this. The first one, we really don't even have to do anything. Improve the city's bond rating. Every rating agency that we go to and we issue debt, or they just review us every year, from a better rating because we have overall status. It's huge. You'd be a couple $100,000 per issue. So that's a big deal. I mean, we wouldn't have to do anything other than be overall. We don't have to exercise any powers, et cetera. You can incur debt beyond 20 years. So we're talking about this Fox River water intake maybe in the next 10 or 20 years. Now the aquifer is starting to dry up. The water intake plant is going to have a useful life expectancy of upwards of 50 or 60 years. So generally, when you're building something that big, you try to match your debt burden, basically, to your repayment period. And while you pay more in interest, obviously, in a 50-year loan, it lowers the annual payment, so it makes it a little bit more affordable. And then the debt service and the actual life expectancy of the asset match, which is good. We talked about reducing the property tax burden on residents a little bit. So one of the just back-of-hand calculations I did is a lot of municipalities will pass a food and beverage tax at the local municipality. Now, we have the ability to pass a limited food tax as a non-homeowner municipality, but it doesn't apply to some eateries, and it also doesn't apply to alcohol. So, like Naperville, will go out and they'll pass a 2% food and beverage tax. So all their bars, all the restaurants, you have an additional 2%, generally a sales tax on there. And what they'll do, and what we could do, is say, okay, if that generates $300,000 annually, which I think is a fairly reasonable number, actually, you could actually reduce the property taxes by $300,000 citywide, and then implement the $300,000 food and beverage tax. So, theoretically, people are coming from outside of town to come eat at our really good restaurants, and so they're paying that tax, and people who are in town and pay property taxes won't have to. So that's the kind of idea that people will usually look at. They want to shift it away from current residents. Change the size of the city council. We did our last referendum, actually. We were supposed to add another ward and two more aldermen. And we have the ability under city code to hold that off for one cycle, basically. So if we were to skip up to 20,000 is the next threshold, so a number of years, we would have to increase, I believe, to 7 wards and 14 aldermen. So, people might say, oh, that's good, you've got more elected officials representation, but it's more salary, it's more ability for things to go haywire, for less of a consensus. So, sometimes adding additional decision makers into the process is something the city council wants to do. So we could do that as a home rule entity. Administrative adjudication improvements, like so the police department issues a ticket for an expired license or something. Comes in front of our, I'll call it city court, it's technically called administrative adjudication, but the law says we have to have the ticket good for, or the ticket window from 30 days to 40 days before we have a court date. So if we were a homeowner municipality, you could actually scrap that window and say, no, we're just going to do the hearings once a month, so you would save on attorney's fees, staff time, operational costs. You'd have more tickets per hearing, but you wouldn't have to be here as often. Residential speed limit is probably the most requested thing. People are always saying, they're driving too fast in the neighborhoods. I prefer to go to 25 miles an hour. Technically, we can do it as a non-homeowner municipality, but it's very expensive and time-consuming. You have to do a study. You have to put signs up on every block, everywhere, and then maintain that. Homeowner municipalities, a lot of times, will just stick 25-mile-an-hour default sign at their entrances and tell people, this is the default everywhere, and it works. So that's something that people have asked for. Probably the number one thing people have asked for. Opting out of state unfunded mandates. So if the state were to say, the city, you have to do an affordable housing study, which has been a past state mandate that hasn't yet applied to us, we would be able to say, no, we think our affordable housing situation in the city is fine, so we don't need to do that study. We'd be able to save time and money. And then modifying the zoning and planning process. There's criteria set in case law and state law that we can deviate from if we had some unique situations in Yorkville. It's nothing that we're proposing necessarily other than sample ballot. That's what it's going to look like. We employ your ballot on November 8th. And that's the end of it. We've got another meeting. It's going to be the same format 2 weeks from now. Again, at 5:30 here in the City Council chambers. Presentation, Q&A afterward, and an open house. And there's information on the website. We've got an FAQ page, a handout here that'll be, it is on the website now. It'll be going out in the utility bill at the end of the month. And then just a forum to submit questions as they come up. So with that, if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to take them.
Meetings, or you know, we'd be notified in advance. Are we going to be told how the money from I would defer to our city administrator to explain in more detail.
Yeah, I mean, the public hearing process typically involves the normal 48-hour agenda posting process, which is like the first city council packet, but then usually also requires a 15 to 30-day public notice window where we have to publish legal notice in the newspaper, and if nothing else, usually when we send the legal notice, the newspaper takes the story and runs with it on whatever we're doing. So, I can't speak for if somebody else is sitting in my position or if there's different city council members 4 or 8 years from now. Here now, we have full memos in the packet that explain every agenda item, what we're doing, why we're doing it. So, certainly the intent and good government would be to explain why we're doing it and what we're doing it for. Otherwise, people are just going to show up to the meeting and say, ask the types of questions that you are and say, hey, I'm not in favor of this. But there isn't a requirement to say, like, if we were passing a gas tax, that it would have to be spent on this street or that street. But it behooves us to do so so that everybody is okay with what we're doing. So, or if they're not, then it gets voted down.
And I know you mentioned something about the tax. How is it shifting the burden away from residents when we get those restaurants too?
Yeah, I mean, same for amusement taxes. So whatever the percentage of out-of-town residents that would eat at those restaurants, that would be the shifting burden. So I can tell you that in Raging Waves, generally 50% of the people that go there are from out of town. So, the $150,000 that we get in amusement taxes, about 75% of that is coming in from people that are going to be in Chicago and other places. So that's offsetting our burden, because then that $75,000 we don't have to collect from in-town residents. So now the other 75 is coming from in-town residents that are going to Raging Waves, same for the food and beverage tax. But, at least then, as opposed to a property tax, it's somewhat discretionary. If you don't want to pay the tax, you can go eat in us, we go over somewhere else. And theoretically, if people have a little bit more money, maybe they're more likely to eat out a little bit more frequently, then they pay a little bit more tax. So, whereas if it's on the property taxes, you're stuck paying for it, really, whether you like it or not.
And just the last thing that I wanted to say was, I was at the last city council meeting, and I know the mayor said that he thought that the citizens should just look at this as a money grabber, and had really hoped that the city council has earned credibility by doing things like lowering the bond rate, which many of us do appreciate that and many other things. The credibility is also earned by how the city council members act or don't react when citizens reach out to them for help personally. I think in the recent experience that I had, all the things we all were pretty cautious about.
So Batavia has 14.
guys who are just under.
And are they all, what do you call it, at large, or are they?
Yeah, they all have the individual wards, so they are 7 wards with 14 aldermen. Okay, 2 per ward.
So my question about that is the redistricting or rewarding, however the heck you say it, is that something that Yorkville pays for, or does the state pay for that?
Oh, yeah, no, you pay for it after you get the decennial census results. You're required to redraw the boundaries, and you have to do it in such a way that you don't disenfranchise people, that you're adequately proportioning the wards. So if you do it wrong, it can be very expensive because you can sue for civil liberties and all these other things.
Right. Now, is that something that, is that also have a public hearing? When you redistrict?
It's been a few years since we did it. I don't remember if there was a public hearing.
I do not understand if there is a public hearing. I do not believe there is. Something done by a committee or approved by the city council. That's why it's
always subject. Yeah, but last time we did it, I remember we had the proposal to farm out the GIS data, the population gathering. I mean, you're talking about $5,000 or $10,000 basically worth of time and direct costs to figure out where people live and where you need to draw the boundaries. We did most of it in-house, but I want to say there was still some math costs as a result of it. It was a fairly intense process.
And you have to, do you have to redraw every 10 years now? Even if you don't?
If you're out of whack, yes. And we were, I think Ward 4 at the time was like 4 times as large as some of the other wards. So we were overdue for a redraw.
You have to review every 10 years.
Yeah.
So that the redraw is only based on your 10-year review.
Because when we were first talking about this, it's like, all right, this is where we could save money. So I think we had 6 items where we would save money. One is bond rating right away. So like the example, we got the memo today saying that, okay, instead of saving $360,000, we saved $450,000-something, right?
Yeah, it was a $62,000.
So yeah, we saved $60,000 more than we thought we were going to save just by increasing or improving how we handle money. So now, as opposed to having to prove why we deserve a better bond rating, now because we have authority we didn't have before, whether or not we choose to use it or not, doesn't matter. Right away, we save money. That was the 2 of the referendum questions are both instant $10,000 a year savings with the treasurer and the clerk. So in addition to all these reasons as to why or how we could save money and shift the burden onto out-of-towners eating at our restaurants, the speed limit thing was a topic a couple times. I've had a couple of conversations, but again, the big fear that I have is still the ability to tax, and that's why if we wanted to go to tax right now, we'd have to go to referendum, correct? For the majority of them?
Yes. If you want to, under the tax cap laws, if you want to increase it beyond 5% of CPI, you can go to referendum and ask for a property tax increase. So but the back door at what's occurred in Yorkville in the past 10 years because of our growth issues. Anytime you pass an alternate revenue bond, you basically have the ability to not abate the property taxes associated with those. So between, and I'm fogging up the ears because I'm trying to push it out of my memory, but, like 9 or 10 or 11, I mean, we increase property taxes from 1 year to the next 90% from year to year so that we can make debt service payments, and that was allowable because of these alternate revenue bonds. So, we already sort of have the ability to increase property taxes by large amounts to meet these debt service payments, and we've actually scaled it back to where it's this next tax levy process that will finally be gone, and it'll be another year of reduction. So that ability is there, but it's a very non-traditional authority, and one that usually people don't like to do because it looks bad, obviously, that it increases property taxes, but 7-8 years ago we had to do it.
Right. So just to give a little bit more background, for like the last, I'd say 3 years, we were talking down in Springfield about, not we, but Springfield was talking about a version of Home Rule called Home Rule Lite, which would basically allow us to make all the decisions and hold all the authority that we wanted without the taxing privileges. Well, we want that. It just didn't go anywhere because it was too much for them to handle at the time. Still too much for them to handle. So if we create our own version of Home Rule Lite, it's pretty much everything we're talking about, again, with the exception of the taxing powers. And that's why we have already discussed at length about limiting those powers for people that aren't sitting here in 2016. So the people that come in next year, the people that come in 2021, those are the people that we want to have to severely limit their ability to raise taxes in the ways that they can right now as non-homeowner entities. So my comfort level with it is only as strict as we can make those limitations on future councils, because that's what creeps me out about it. By giving people the keys, are they going to use them? So that's why I want to be proactive in severely limiting the freedoms that future council members have with raising taxes.
What guarantee is there that you want?
Well, that's why there is not.
I mean, the home rule policy that we've passed applies to future city councils, but really at any time somebody can say with a majority vote that repeals, and then they're going to go in a different direction and not follow it. So we've passed it. We want to abide by it. It applies to future city councils to that degree. But if 5 out of 8 aldermen, or if it ends up being 14, so 8 out of 14 aldermen at the time agree, then, you know, they can change course really without us being able to prevent it. The only recourse you have at that point then is the citizen petition to remove home rule again, which has occurred.
I do want to focus on this. As you know, I work all over the state. And one of the things that frustrates me, this United City of Rotorua, as far as said, has done it. But non-home rule have found ways out of necessity to issue bonds and incur debt. What they do is alternate revenue bonds, where you have a source of revenue that pledge to a particular bond. Limited, you back it up with the general obligation of the city. These types of bonds are issued. Shall I tell you how many I've worked on this year for non-home rule entities? The idea that home rule gives you this great taxing power over and above non-home rule is a fallacy, people. It really is. Because this city has never availed of such alternate means of borrowing money does not mean they don't exist. And we as a city council have not done it, nor have your predecessors. But that doesn't speak to the future city council members in the city. And so the point of the story is home rule, more importantly, gives you business maneuverability that doesn't exist today, that ultimately saves money in operation and gives you a better tax. And I wish there were time to go through all of the alternate revenue bonds that I have worked on in the last 2 years with various communities by non-home municipalities. So I hate to discourage your adamant position on not borrowing money and raising taxes, with which I, of course, agree.
Right.
But where there's a will, there's always a way.
Yeah, right. We still do have the exact number. I want to say it's between $7 and $10 million for alternate revenue bonds. So again, that's a 15 or 20 year time period. So the annual payment on those is, you know, probably $1 million, $1.5 million. But you know, next year under the tax levy, if you said we're in another crisis where building permits fall off or some sort of revenue dries up, and we don't have the ability to make these debt service payments, actually, it's a non-vote of the city council. It doesn't even require action. If you remember, we had to do it because of the way the bonds are set up. So, you know, it's there. It's just in a different form, and it's not widely used.
Right, but I think it's pointing back to defining the intent of the decision as opposed to laying out every possibility from here on out. It's the intent isn't to grab as much checks as possible. The intent is to be able to operate in a way that allows us to, number one, save money almost instantly, two, get a little bit more bang for our buck by being able to borrow out longer. Because that water treatment plant, if we had to pay back whether it's 40 or 50 million in 20 years as opposed to 30, you save a considerable amount of money by, at least annually, by stretching out a little bit farther. I mean, that's how all of my car loans were right when I got out of college, instead of doing the 48 months, I'm going up to 60. So it's more of a how can you operate the city as a business without, you know, basically allowing the city council to make those tax decisions so freely.
You keep referring to building permits as if this is the pot at the end of the rainbow. Might you extend the build program and extend it to high density housing? That's the play that sucks all surfaces and demands on tax dollars.
Well, there's a good trade-off there. I mean, in my opinion, you give up a little bit up front for the long-term tax dollar.
And like any person who went through bankruptcy over the past 8 years here, that's exactly the reason why they went broke, so they could borrow more money. I think they need definite restrictions on how you spend it and a cap.
Power. I have the power. We are the people that make the votes. It's going to be the people's vote if we're going to. put the referendum in place in the first place. That's why I appreciate you coming out and actually asking the questions you are doing, because we had three people in the audience tonight. It's pretty pathetic. I wish more people would take the time. So, that's it.
Anyone else? Looking up unfunded mandates. Governor Bronner started a task force on all the unfunded mandates. 406 pages of unfunded mandates. Anything you want to know about unfunded mandates?
A lot of them are pension related.
Yeah, pension, workman's comp.
Yep.
A lot of stuff like that that, you know, doesn't make the news, but we have to go back.
The affordable housing plan, though, is probably the one that I'm most familiar with. It's all the North Shore communities.
Thank you.
7? Like, is that?
I mean, it's your call.
Yeah, you can turn it off. You can turn it off.
Since there's no further business in the home rule referendum meeting, we will adjourn that meeting. Meeting adjourned.